Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Food Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and every major podcast provider. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicfood.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or simply call into the show at area code 917-932-1068. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. Today my guest is Donna Blinston, and we're going to be talking about how to resolve fears and phobias using NLP. Fear is a belief in which a person believes that something that has not happened has actually happened. According to the Mayo Clinic, a phobia is an overwhelming and unreasonable fear of an object or situation that poses little real danger. Unlike the brief anxiety most people feel when they give a speech or take a test, a phobia is a long-lasting, causes intense physical and psychological reactions, and can also affect your ability to function normally at work or in a social setting. Both fear and phobias can cause great distress that can actually last an entire lifetime. Now, NLP is a wonderful technique that can actually be of great value to resolve fear-based issues as well as phobias. NLP stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. And it's an approach to communication, personal development, and psychotherapy created in the 1970s. The title refers to a stated connection between the neurological processes, hence the word neuro, language, which is linguistic, and behavioral patterns that have been learned through experience, or if rather programming, and can be organized to achieve specific goals in life. Donna Blinston is not only a certified NLP practitioner, but she's also a registered nurse with a specialty in gastroenterology, the liver, and in bloodborne viruses. As a certified trainer of NLP, she uses the tools and techniques of NLP to build a professional relationship with and also enhance the lives of her patients in order to promote good health and well-being. Donna has also incorporated her training to help people in the areas of leadership, self-help, practical development, and life coaching. And not to mention, she's also the author of the best-selling book called Psychobabble, which is a straightforward, plain English guide to the benefits of NLP. And if you really would like to learn exactly how NLP can be applied, different NLP techniques, and why they are so incredibly important, you definitely not only want to read her book Psychobabble, but you want to pay attention to what she has to say, especially on today's show. So I would like to welcome to the show Ms. Donna Blinston. Good evening, hello, Donna.
Hello, Jane.
Great to have you back, Donna. You have become by far one of my most favorite people to talk to. Every time I speak to you, I learn something new.
Thank you. It's great talking to you.
Donna, with your work, can you just tell our audience about your own personal experience and how you came to understand that NLP could not only be of value to yourself, but you found that, you know, something, this is something that I can use at the hospital?
Yes, it was through my nursing career that I found NLP. I'd recently qualified, and the ward manager that I had at the time was what I perceived to be quite a battle axe. She was very passionate about our training, education, really pushed us with our continuous professional development, which at the time I thought was a hindrance, but on hindsight, it was the most amazing thing she could have done for any of us. And one of the things that she was pushing, as I say, was a KSF, where we had to develop in our communication, leadership, and management skills in the nursing times, that said 4-day NLP diploma covered all six of the course KSF, which was amazing. I thought 4 days and I've got her off my back for a year. So I went on to this 4-day diploma And wow, it just absolutely. I was previously very shy, quiet. I had an overwhelming belief that I wasn't good enough. I would never quite. I knew that I was able, and I knew that I could do my job, but I was always very. I was more concerned that people liked me, and just it's insecurity. I think was the main thing. So NLP answered a lot of that, and I did have a lot of fears. I wouldn't do presentations. I wouldn't go for job interviews. I would certainly not speak up in a crowd. And the fact that NLP had changed me so much just from this 4 days, I just wanted more. So I went on to do the practitioner course, and that just transformed me even further. My relationships improved both professionally and personally. Within work, I moved from being the newly qualified D grade, was asked to take the D to E conversion course, which is going up to a higher grade, which I did, and I became the E grade. I think the main thing was I had more clarity, more focus, and more self-belief. So I went on to do the Master Practitioner course, which, wow, doors were just opening left, right, and centre. I was being asked to do training. I was advised to go for the Sister's post, which I did, and became the ward sister. All sorts, June. So many doors, it was amazing. As the relationships just improved again and again, and my confidence and belief in myself just grew. I decided that I would open up my own business in NLP. The more I was learning, the more I was seeing how it was benefiting not only me, my colleagues, but the patients. I wanted to be able to reach more patients, and just on the ward, I could only facilitate that through my staff. So I decided that I'd open up the business and train more nurses so that I could reach more patients. So I did. I trained in leadership, communication, management, looking at the staff as themselves, but also not only their personal life, but their professional life as well. Then from there, I went on and wrote my own book, which is Psychobabble, and it just keeps on growing.
Now, let me ask you a question when it comes to your work as a medical professional.
Yeah.
From your, or based upon your experience utilizing NLP on your patients, what are some of the core benefits that most people wouldn't really know unless they spoke to someone who is a medical professional such as yourself? I mean, is this saving money as far as just the amount of treatments that are needed? Is it saving, you know, the patient from having to be given all sorts of different pharmaceuticals? I mean, what types of things are we talking about here?
I think the big thing is the ability to build the relationship up so quickly with the patient. Being able to build that level of rapport and get onto a level where they trust you and they know that they can speak to you about anything. A lot of the patients hold things back, not because they're trying to be deceitful against you, but because they don't feel comfortable or they don't think it's important.
Mm.
And by having that open relationship with them and being able to step into their world, which is one of the big things with NLP, you can enhance that relationship, get that level of trust so that things that potentially is not directly to do with what you're treating them, but they feel comfortable to talk to you about other areas of the health, which will impact on what you're trying to do with them. And certainly I found the fact that I do build that relationship up very quickly. I do have that trust with my patients. I get where they're coming from. And, you know, because they're comfortable with me, I can talk to them very easily. If I find that they're not taking the medication, rather than, you know, me just accuse them of not taking the medication, I can adjust my language to ask them, you know, how they feel about the medication, what would they recommend to other people about it, and if they can't recommend it to other people, and it could be a case of actually something's going wrong, so it's finding out, okay, so if that's going wrong, why is it? Are they actually taking the medication? Or is it a case that they're taking it, but they're struggling with it, and they're not telling me about the side effects because they don't want to be a burden? But it's all those little things. It's a bigger picture of what's going on with the patient that you can enhance and expand on by using a lot of the tools.
It's really fascinating that with the way that the medical profession is, we're starting to really heavily explore these different modalities that are not only very effective, but they don't require the typical practices that Western medicine typically offers. And it's just great that you're using something that really does make perfect sense in order to help heal someone that would probably need decades of treatment in order to overcome these problems.
Yeah. I find a lot with patients is sometimes they just need to be listened to. And unfortunately, with the way the health service is, nurses and doctors, they don't have the time. They're on such short time constraints. So by being aware of language and listening for the hidden messages, to the point of what they're trying to say, which is often difficult for some patients, and they feel like they need to over-explain. So when it is that you're in a time constraint, but you know that they need something from you and that, you know, they're struggling to get there, without disrespecting them or making them feel like they're not being listened to or they're not being rushed, you can get them to the point, I suppose, really quicker so that you can make sure that you can help them. And also, with certain things with, you know, as a nurse or as a doctor, any medical professional, you're presented with a problem and the person comes to you for treatment for that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But often that problem is just one layer of the onion. And, you know, it's everything else that goes with it. And by being able to peel back the other layers, sometimes that problem is actually serving a purpose. So, you know, what's behind it? What else is going on? Especially when people have got issues within their personal life, it might be that they can't do certain things or they can't do, you know, if it was physio or certain exercises, dietary changes, taking medication, anything like that from a specific treatment side to other sides where it might be that they've been advised that they need to do, I don't know, certain regimes that have been set out, but they're not doing them. It might be the reason they're not doing them is because if they did and they got better, it would change so many other things within their life.
Interesting.
Some people become their illness. If they've been ill for a long time, they don't know how to do anything else. And it's okay us going in and, you know, just, you know, here you go, you're cured of that, go on and get on with your life. It's like, well, actually, you know, what, this person hasn't done anything else other than that. They might not have been able to work. They might not have the confidence, the capabilities, the behaviours to go on and get on with everyday life. So it's everything else that you need to think about. And by being able to say, acknowledge that that's a reality for a lot of people, then they'll start to be able to come to you and say, well, actually, I'm scared of improving this part of my health. If I do, and then I'm going to have to go back to work. Or, you know, and who will look after my kids then, or I can't afford that. And it might be that they can do it all, it's just they're not aware of the other resources that are out there to help them. So it's taking everything on board so that you're fully supporting your patient.
No, it's interesting that you mention that, because there's a movie called The Shawshank Redemption with Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins, and there's a particular character that has been institutionalized. He's in a, you know, a federal prison for, I think, 50 years, and he's released for, I guess, serving time or you know, fulfilling, I guess, the majority of the time, what have you. And he can't function as a regular person. He constantly has to, you know, ask to go to the bathroom, just like all sorts of things that we kind of take for granted. He's so used to having to ask permission, and it's almost as if in order for him to function, he needs that structure, that extreme discipline in order to just exist. And he winds up committing suicide because he cannot exist in a world where there isn't any structure. So it's just interesting that you point that out. And that's, yeah, that is something very common. I mean, people that are accustomed to very, very rigid rules have a very hard time, especially if they are just left to kind of flounder. And, you know, the opposite is true when you have someone that is used to just floundering the minute that you give them rules. It's kind of like a wild deer that is all of a sudden has a collar and a leash. It just can't function, you know. But, Donna, I want to ask you also in regards to your work, when you work with other medical practitioners, is this something that you feel people are really opening up to because they see that this is a tremendous value in the sense that it can really accelerate the healing process? And do you also offer training sessions to other healers that are out there?
I'll offer training sessions to everybody and anybody who wants to come on the courses. And I have found that there's more and more people are open to it. I think it's becoming more common practice that alternative therapy, people are looking for alternative therapies. People are a lot more educated now and a lot more aware of what else is out there. And the old, we call it the white coat syndrome, that the doctor knows what's right. I'm not saying that they're wrong, but people are more self-educated around health now, so they're more open to looking for alternative ways. And I think as a medical professional, we need to be aware of those different things that are out there, just so that if someone is going for it, then we can say, you know, trial it. If that's something that you want to do, by all means, these could be possible things that you might need support on if it is come back to me. Or, you know, be aware that if they are on having a, you know, certain treatment, that other professionals are aware of it. Whenever I'm treating a client on a private basis, for with NLP for life coaching or any specific things, depending on what it is, I'll always, and their medical history. If they have got a significant medical history, I will ask for written permission from their GP to work with them. And if they've previously been with a psychologist or a counsellor, I'll also ask for them to inform them and to get permission. So I don't want to be going over or undoing the work of what other people have been doing. So it is about all medical professionals working together. And I generally think that a lot of people are taking it on board. And as they're seeing the success from it, it's being taken on and being adapted. And as soon as you start to integrate the general principles of NLP into your life, because you automatically start to change, becoming more effective with your communication, being more respectful to where the other person is at and what their reality is, people start to see a difference in you and become curious. You know, what is it that she's doing? What's happening? And there's an automatic interest.
Really fascinating. Now, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. When it comes to today's topic, which is fears and phobias, how would you handle the following type of a situation? I'll give you a case example. There's a woman who's 42 years old. Her name is Stacy, and she's quite ashamed of this fear, phobia, what have you, that she has of cats. And logically, she knows that they're just a small domestic animal that is not going to hurt her. But every time she sees one, she really just, she goes bananas. And it's almost as if she can't get away from cats fast enough. I mean, so many people love cats, and it's just amazing that this type of a phobia occurs. But with this particular situation, she actually will just run. She'll scream. Mm-hmm. She'll hide behind people. She will shove them just to get out of the way where the cat is. If she sees a cat crossing the road, God forbid if it's a black cat, she takes off like a bat out of hell. Now, she's managed to basically manage this phobia, But, you know, she avoids going to visit friends who have cats, and she doesn't go to pet stores or anything like that. And she, you know, she'll always ask before she goes to any type of a family gathering or a friends gathering, anything like that. But, you know, she has met a man who has two cats, and, you know, this guy's, you know, basically the person that she feels she could spend the rest of her life with. And unfortunately, the relationship just is not going to work unless she can get over this phobia of cats. So what would you recommend? I mean, this isn't just a fear, it's a phobia. So can you explain to our audience, to just make it very crystal clear, if she had a fear of cats, what the difference would be as opposed to a phobia of cats?
Yeah, a fear is an unpleasant emotion that's caused usually by a belief that something or someone or something is dangerous and is likely to cause pain or a threat to them. But it's more on an unpleasant emotion level, whereas a phobia is a severe, irrational, intense fear of an object or a situation that poses little or no actual danger. And a phobia is usually formed from a one-off learning. So it'll be a one-off event that happened in their past. And nine times out of 10, it's usually something within childhood. I know there's a girl that I met when I was doing my training, actually, and she had an irrational fear herself over cats. And when the tools of NLP were used and it was unpicked, that fear came from her being, I can't remember her age now, but she's only a small girl, and she'd gone to put the bins out in, you know, the big tall wheelie bins? She'd gone to put a black bag in a big tall wheelie bin, and as she lifted the lid, this cat came flying out the bin. So as a small child, it absolutely petrified the hell out of her. And she'll have gone bolted into the house, and from that day on, she's never go near a cat. And the reality is that cat will have been locked in there for 2 or 3 days, you know, for how long, we don't know. Could have been since the last bin went in. Was probably terrified in the dark and was just, it's an automatic way to protect itself. But as a young child, that was a danger to her. So whenever she saw a cat, because it was such an intense trauma to her back when she was younger, that same level of scaredness was being elicited as she was an adult every time she saw the cat. So what we did with trainer did with the NLP was just an NLP technique on her, where you basically get her to double dissociate away from the situation and look back at it through older, wiser eyes before the event when she was completely safe, to a time after the event when she was completely safe. And because you do it so quickly, you literally scramble the memory and take away any negative emotions and emotional charge which is there. And it's done again and again and again and again until you can't bring back that past memory. And, you know, I watched this event, this technique being demonstrated, and from a woman that you would say the word cat and she would shudder on her chair, almost, you know, she greyed out on us, really irrational. She was, her nails looked like they were going to go through the chair, going from that to the point where she was like, yeah, so what? Not bothered.
Wow.
So that's the difference. A fear, you know, you can be, a fear is more of a, so it's scared, nervous, anxious. It's those levels. I mean, fear can be very inhibiting. But it's also, it doesn't give you the intense flight response that a phobia does.
It's interesting. Most people are afraid of dogs, but cats, is that a common phobia?
Well, I've met 3 people, whether it's because I'm in the NLP field, but I have met 3 people that have been, you know, a fear, an intense phobia of cats. And it's all been through similar kind of backgrounds where, you know, this girl that was in the bin had another girl who went under a bed. And as she was climbing under the bed, playing hide and seek, the cat scratched her across the face, but she didn't know. that the cat was there and she was only young. That was another time. And it's just, it, because you're younger, it's that one-off event, that one-off learning, which on one side, the fact that you've got a phobia and you can have such a response to a one-time learning is actually really good, because we can remove the fear, but the capability to have such an amount of learnings over one-off event is something that can be utilised and more empowering for them in the future.
Wow, that's just amazing. Just how the whole thing works.
No. But yeah, sorry, I've diverted that impact. Yeah, I have. I've seen three with cats that have come particularly with an intense fear. Some people have come to me that they've got a fear of cats, but it's more general. They don't like the way that they'll come up and I thought it was this Tanya. It's more of a dislike. I just don't want to be around a cat.
Yeah.
Rather than it being an actual fear, a proper phobia.
Interesting. Now, my next example case is Simone. She has been recently offered a new post within her department, which is a fabulous opportunity for her, but the job has forced her to go out on an external application. Basically, what that means is she has to travel and give presentations to very large crowds. And even though she is very good at what she does, she is petrified at the thought of giving a presentation to any group, doesn't matter how big or how small. And this is going to be a huge problem because she, in order for her to get this job, she actually has to give a presentation on a particular subject to the decision makers in this company, and if she can't give that presentation, she's not going to be able to get that job. So how would you handle someone with this type of a fear of, I guess this would be a fear of public speaking, or would this be a phobia?
I probably call this more of a fear of public speaking or fear of presentations. And this is something I come across a lot, a real lot. Most of my work is on this line. And there's multiple techniques within NLP that you can use. You'd have to investigate it more. But the main thing would be around looking at the reasons why she's so terrified of presentations. And if it's things with regards to her confidence, then, we can apply an anchor. An anchor is where you apply a state to a specific part of your body, for example. And an anchor is basically a stimulus response. The examples of stimulus responses, a visual one would be a red light at traffic lights. As you're driving up to it, as you see the amber, the red, you automatically respond. It's a conditioned response. Another example would be a photograph of family, friends, or an event, a happy event in your past, which as soon as you look at it, it floods back all those emotions, those states, that happy feeling, the love, or whatever that picture's about. An example of an auditory anchor would be maybe your favourite song, whether this might be your first dance at your wedding, a dance from your school, college, uni disco, a family song or anthem, or maybe a favourite hymn from church. But as soon as you hear it, you get those emotions that flood back. A kinesthetic one, that could be a texture, a feel of a jumper as you put it on. So kinesthetic also falls into your smells and your taste. So it could be that you smell like fresh coffee in the morning, for me anyway, or the smell of fresh bread or a hot stew being cooked or wood burning on a fire. It automatically will bring an emotional response out in you. So what we can do is, using that principle of a conditioned response, is we can apply an anchor of confidence where we get a person to go back to the time in their past when they did feel really confident. To go back to that time to see what they saw, hear what they heard, and really feel those feelings of being totally confident. And as those emotions build up, we'll ask them to apply their anchor. As it reaches its peak and starts to fall off, we'll ask them to release it. So you're capturing the top piece of the peak. And we'll do that again and again, making that anchor stronger and stronger. And we can also put on there calm or powerful, whatever it is that she feels that she doesn't have, that by having that would enable her to do a presentation. I'd also teach her the format of how to lay out a presentation so that you're covering all the four angles of a presentation, whether a person is a theorist, a reflector, whether they're an antagonist, whatever their preferred learning styles is, there's a format that we can use that covers all of the different areas. So your readers, your doers, your theories, your people that need to go away and look about it and what if it afterwards. So that she knows that she'll be covering all the different areas, so that'll build her confidence within herself to know that she's delivering a presentation that'll be understood by each of the different people within the audience or the panel. Once we've done the anchoring technique, I'll get her to do some visualization techniques where she sees herself delivering the presentation, firing her anchor. And while she's visualizing it, I'll get her to troubleshoot. So every possible thing that can go wrong, from the PowerPoint not working or the pen running out, her falling over, anything, lights going off, everything that could go wrong, so that she's practiced it going wrong in her mind and dealt with it, so that she's always almost got a to-do list kicked off in her head. We then look at a technique called perceptual positions, where you have three positions. Mm-hmm. One is yourself. If you imagine a triangle, position one would be yourself. Did you say Simone she was called?
Yes.
So position one would be Simone. And then opposite her in position two, the other side of the triangle, I would have the people who are going to go on the panel for the that she's going to do the presentation for the job interview. So I'd have all of them there. And from position one, I'd get her to look over at the panel and, you know, tell all of her feelings, how she's feeling about it, and what kind of things she wants to say, what her message is, what she's good at, how she can be a benefit to the show, and so on. From there, I'd then ask her to go into the position of the different people in the interview. And when she's in their shoes, I'd get her to ask herself questions. So she's pre-rehearsing, being them, and what is it that they want to know from her to know that she's going to be the ideal candidate. From there, I get her to go to the top of the triangle, look at the other two, and to find out the relationship between the two, what she needs to do in order to do it, you know, successfully. And that's how we'd work it. And there's so many different techniques, but they'd be the core that I always do with them to start off with.
It's just absolutely fascinating that so many people have these issues, and, you know, it just amazes me that if we have these tools available that we haven't utilized them a long time ago, you know, I think would help so many people. Donna, we do have someone who's been very patient, so let's see if they're still on the line. Do you have a question for Donna Blinson?
Yes, very interesting. I had never met this woman, but eventually through talking with her in many conversations, she was a beautiful spiritual teacher, but she had the traits of a narcissist, and I call her out on that, and because she was starting to project things onto my truth, I wouldn't allow it. But related to narcissism, is there any cure, and have you had any experience with past life regressions in treating such a condition?
From a perspective of gestalt therapy, are you aware of gestalt therapy and the work that was done from Fitzpearls?
No.
Timeline therapy has actually been trademarked by Tad James. And the timeline techniques look back at past events, and they look back at the root cause as to what the root cause of the problem is. And when you go back to the root cause, you will ask and look into whether it was before, during, or after the person's birth. So if it was before their birth, then we'd go back. And from that point, you'd want to find out whether it was a past life, and you know how many past lives it was ago. If we, when we do go into those levels, we'll want to take them to a time before it ever happened, to a time when they were completely safe, where they had no negative emotions at all, and to get them to look down on the event from a high, double dissociated place where they're completely safe. And with this part where they've got, they don't have any of those negative emotions, they can re-look at that event with older, wiser eyes. And that would be the way that I would deal with it. And then it's, the principle around Gestalt therapy is that every event mounts upon itself, which is why you'll be going over the top, I suppose is the best way, when you, the irrational behaviour, when you just go completely overboard over something that's inappropriate, really. And it's all, and the reason why that behaviour presents is because it's compounded by a chain of events that all link the same emotions together. So by going to the first event where that emotion never took place, where they're completely safe, they can look down at the event, learn the lessons that they hadn't learned in the first place. It's often a reason why you still have a memory is because you haven't learned something that you need to learn. So by doing that, taking those lessons and learnings on board, you can then move on to the next event within that chain. And the principle of it really is that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So if you keep on weakening the link, weakening all the compounding emotions, taking them off, then you'll help to relieve that problem. Does that answer your question?
Yes, because she became sort of threatening to me and she cut communications, but I would be there to help her, not to save her. But does someone have to want to get the help themselves? And I believe her situation stemmed from a sexual abuse as a child from a brother.
Yeah.
So it's very sad. And I told her I would always be there for her, but I don't know if she'll ever come back or not. But I just don't know anything else that I can do except to send light and love and say prayers for her.
Yeah. I'm sure what you're doing is an amazing help. And she does have to want the help because it is a big commitment. And, you know, especially to do something like the, what I've just explained, she needs to be 100% committed to the process. Certainly,
that's the tough part, yeah.
It is, yeah. And it's...
Miracles happen, that's what I'm praying for.
They do, and when it's right for her and when she feels in the right place and it's safe for her to do that, she will do that.
Yeah, the saddest part is she's got, like, dual... She puts out so much love to the world, but I don't think she can receive it.
She probably struggles to. Some people will automatically... It's almost like they put a wall up, and that wall's there to protect themselves. So if they don't allow anything past it, they're keeping themselves safe. And that might be just a way that she grounds herself, and it's her
protection. I think that's exactly right. Yes, I think that's what she's doing.
Yeah.
And just keep in mind that if she is going to receive the benefits from NLP or any healing modality, she has to be ready to receive it. And that's quite a challenge. And you, being in a supportive position, all you can do is just be supportive until she makes that decision, which is really essential. I guess she has to get to a point where enough is enough, and then she'll make that decision, or she may just choose to live completely dysfunctionally. And
yes,
it's unfortunate, but that's how people are.
I think that's the latter is true, because she, you know, she won't accept responsibility for things she does, so she distances herself from it and just thinks it'll go away in time. I have a friend who's a psychologist for over 40 years and told him about this person, and he listened to a little presentation she had done And 13 minutes into it, she was proclaiming herself as God. He said he wouldn't even consider treating her. And he's treated some heavy-duty stuff. So it is very sad when they're so out of touch. But, again, all I can do is send light and love and prayers, and that's what I do every day.
And just learn from the experience. I mean, sometimes people put into your life so that you can help them in certain ways. And also they can show you things. And it's not necessarily that the relationship didn't work out because, you know, she's a bad person, you're a bad person, or, you know, negativity or anything like that. But sometimes things don't work out because something else is meant to work out. So just keep that in mind.
Well, you're so exactly right, because she came into my life, and she's a beautiful spiritual teacher, but, you know, behind the scenes, her life is a mess. But she helped me. Because I was pushing to get things accomplished. She said, just stop and be still. It's already done. Relax and enjoy. And that was the best advice anybody could have given me at that time, because now things are just manifesting all over the face beautifully. So my heart is torn, because she truly felt like a twin flame connection. I was blessed to have been married to an earth angel for 35 and a half years, and she blessed me with the lesson of unconditional love. So I thought I found another person like that, but I understand what you're saying, and that is very accurate and very true. So it is a blessing, and I just wish her all the best, and that she'll be blessed for helping me.
Well, one thing that I will recommend that you do is Donna's book, Psychobabble, is extremely beneficial in the sense that her explanations of, or rather, as far as understanding certain events, especially in your own life, it helps you to really understand things as they've happened, and also kind of to put some peace where it's needed. And so if you have an opportunity, check it out. I read it. I couldn't put it down. I just thought the world of it. And obviously, I love Donna. That's why she's on the show today. It's something that I personally found to be very beneficial as far as understanding different relationships. And I'm not talking about just family, but friends, relationships, business colleagues, what have you, just to understand what their perspective is. And that's the beauty of what I've received from learning about NLP and the techniques involved. It's helped me to grow tremendously. And it's interesting, you know, as an adult, you think that you know so much, and then you read a book like Psychobabble, and then it opens up a whole new world to you where you're starting to reexamine different things in your life, and you understand why worked out the way that they did. But also it's very healing in the sense that it almost gives you insight after the fact that still can benefit you, because there still is that lesson to be learned. And sometimes even if you learn that lesson much later on, it's still beneficial.
Oh, that's exactly right too. And if I could share my name, there's a blog that has a picture of my Earth Angel wife on it. You might enjoy it. I'm working on a huge mission vision, and what you said is so very accurate, because I didn't even realize how big my mission was until I looked back over all the experiences I had in my life. And I'm looking to bring spirituality into global economics and combine it with unconditional love, a whole new paradigm, transparency, ethics, legal, and morals for mankind's future. And if you Google my name, it's Hugh, H-U-G-H, Trawlsen, T like Tom, R-A-U-L-S-E-N, as in Nancy, and you'll see various things on the internet. My wife on creativity777.com, there's a picture of her actually on her wedding day. It's a very unusual picture. My profile is behind her. But I thank you so much, ladies. That's very helpful information for me, and I love working with women for the age of Aquarius is just coming in, and to get women's attention. I came across a statement recently that's fun. I say that women have to save the Earth because it's the only planet in the universe that has chocolate.
Well, there you go. Hugh, thank you so much for the call. Have a wonderful weekend.
Nice talking to you.
Now, Donna, let me ask you a question. In regards to the topic of fears and phobias, if someone is looking to try to overcome a particular fear or phobia, do you have any just quick things that they can remember if they're trying to determine, okay, do I definitely have a fear or is this an actual phobia? And, you know, what do you recommend that they do?
I think the main thing to recognize the difference is a phobia will have you shaking at your core. It'll be something that will make you, you know, cut your hand off to get away from something. A phobia is an irrational, uncontrollable response, whereas a fear, you might not like it in any way, shape or form and not want to be around it, but it doesn't make you repulsed to the point where you've got to get away. And that's the main differences. I think if, you know, if you think it's the motivation around it, I suppose, is another object. If it was something that you had to do, say, for your, I don't know, a family or a friend, like going to the room with the spider, for example, to go and get something, if you had to go in for somebody else and you would do it for them, then that's more on the lines of a fear. If you couldn't go in that room for nobody, then, you know, you're pushing towards a phobia there. So I suppose there that's what helps me distinguish between the two. And the things for it is we can apply an anchor. If it's a fear that of spiders or a fear of going to a room or anything that makes them anxious, they can apply an anchor of calmness, of being relaxed, that will help control those feelings of anxiety. If it's a phobia, start doing with anchors. We'll certainly start off with a safe, an anchor to make sure they feel safe and in the here and now. But it would need to be more of a phobia cure technique, which is more complicated. More complicated to explain effectively over the phone, if you will. Certainly something that somebody would need to have done to them by somebody who knows the technique and knows the ecology and can make sure the person's in a safe place.
Such as you.
Yes, such as me, yeah.
Donna, are you, well, you're going to be conducting a number of workshops over the summer. Can you just share some of the information with our audience?
Yeah, I'd love to. My first workshop is on the 28th of July, and that's where I'm looking at the tools and techniques of NLP that can be used within business sales and marketing. Looking around the business, their identity, their vision, their values, and what's important to them and how they can relate to their customers and their clients in order to enhance their business and marketing. The next workshop, that's running for about 2 hours in the middle of the day. The next workshop is the following Saturday, using the techniques within NLP, specifically looking around relationships. Mainly professional relationships and personal, but within more of a work environment, enhancing communication and leadership and sales. So a lot for team managers and anyone that works with a patient, a client, and businesses could come along to that as well. But it is looking more on a relationship and learning to ways in which you can respect the other person's part of the world, relate to them and communicate more effectively, and how you can use that to predict and understand their behaviour. The following workshop is the next Saturday. So last one was the 4th, this one's the 11th. This is where we're looking again at relationships and the tools and techniques, but more on a personal level, looking around self-help and the tools that we can use to help people with their confidence, their capabilities, their skills, whether it's from returning to work, the first time of a job, or after a divorce or any significant family event, and how you can move on from that and the tools that are available to do that. The final workshop that I'm doing is on the 18th, again a Saturday, where I'll be looking at fears and phobias in more detail. So we'll be looking at fears around the common fears, around the fear of being good enough, the fear of presentations, for example, and then also into phobias, looking at how we can distinguish between the two and looking at the phobia technique in more detail.
Thank you, Donna. And can you give our audience your website so that they can not only keep up with everything that you're doing, but also check out a copy of Psychobabble, which to me, I wish I had discovered your work many, many years ago. It would have helped me tremendously, not only with just dealing with family, friends, but also with work.
Yes, thank you. My website is www.inspirationalsolutions-nlp.co.uk.
Thank you so much, Donna. And Donna, it's been wonderful just having you back to talk about something that is affecting so many millions of people, and just the fact that there's something that is available that actually works, and it's not some sort of a gimmick or anything like that. And also, it's something that is being more widely used in the medical community. So, now it's just so great talking to you and learning about the things that you do.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be on your show, Jean. It really is. The NLP is advancing so much day by day, more and more people looking at how they can link it with different modalities like psychotherapy, like spiritualism, clean language, crystal healing, and all the other modalities that are out there are using the techniques in combination with what they do. So it is a fast help. It's a quick work that can have huge impact on people's lives.
And that is something that it definitely does. And, you know, the workshops, folks, if you have the time and you're available, I mean, they are online workshops. And, you know, it's great to have someone who is such a professional and who is also a certified expert, which is really very important. But check it out. And also check out Donna's book, Psychobabble. Donna, thanks again. And everybody, thank you for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great weekend, everybody.